Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. This is your morning show host, Julie Calamine, and I'm joined by my morning show co-host, Phil Huff. Good morning, Phil.
Morning, Julie.
How have you been?
Good.
Good. Any exciting events over the weekend that you'd like to share with us?
Exciting events over the weekend. It was a day when I was going to do yard work, but then it was just pouring down rain Sunday. So that's good.
Yes, that is good. Yeah. It's going to help our gardens grow at some point.
Yeah.
And my weekend was great. I had company in from out of town, and we attempted and attempted and attempted outdoor activities, but it was pretty damp. We tried.
Well, you try.
We did try. Well, before we begin with our morning show program, let's talk about the weather since we've been doing that. And it looks like there is some remaining damp weather ahead, but maybe light at the end of the tunnel, so to say. Today, we can expect a high of 45 degrees, but we will be looking at rain and snow. It's a 70% chance today of rain, snow likely, and then a chance of showers. It goes down to 50%. Tonight, slight chance of showers, then mostly cloudy, low of 30 degrees. And then Wednesday, it's going to be a little warmer, a high of 48, and the chance of rain goes down 20%. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy. I don't see rain in the forecast, a low of 32. And Thursday and Friday are looking pretty nice. We've got a high of 57, mostly sunny, lows in the 30s, high in the 50s.
I don't trust it. That rain's hiding somewhere. Just because you don't see it on the forecast doesn't mean it's not whipping back around.
You know, Phil, I've got to agree. I have become somewhat suspicious of our local weather forecasts. But nonetheless, we've got something to hope for, so we'll keep that in mind. Yeah. Phil, this morning we've got an interesting pair of guests, and our first guest is a gentleman who's a local gardener, farmer, sustainable farmer who supplies food for our community, and his name is Spencer Neatman with Moose Meadows. Good morning, Spencer.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Welcome. And our second guest is Emma Stanford, and Emma is a new person at the Sandpoint Farmers Market, aren't you, Emma?
I am.
Yes, well, welcome and good morning.
Thank you.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yes, so we're going to be talking about what it's like to be a relatively new sustainable farmer here in our community, and then what's going on with the farmers market this year. Let's begin with Spencer. Spencer, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you came to be here in the Sandpoint area.
Yeah, well, I grew up in Seattle, but I spent summers out here, a couple weeks every summer out here, because my dad and my uncle own land in Clark Fork. And so I went away to college in Maine and met my girlfriend partner out there, and we both had the dream of starting a farm, and my dad and my uncle basically offered their land here in Clark Fork to us to farm, and it was kind of my dream to live in Clark Fork and my dream to farm, and so the two dreams could come together, and we moved out here in May of 2016, about 2 years ago, and started the farm, Moose Meadow Farm.
And had you been here before?
Yeah, yeah. So okay. We had spent, you know, living in Seattle, we'd drive over for a growing couple up. Weeks. In July and August, the nice time of year.
Now, where did you go to school in Maine?
Bowdoin College. Bowdoin. It's a very small liberal arts college.
I went there. To Colby.
Okay, great.
And I don't remember learning a lot about gardening, but
my next question, too, what was your college? What did you go to school for?
I studied biology.
Ah.
There was no sort of farming or agriculture or any sort of degree in that field, and biology was about as close as I could get.
Right. Well, so tell us more about how you came to become an avid gardener and want to do that as a career, as a vocation.
It was kind of by chance, actually. The summer after my freshman year in college, I wanted to stay in Maine and just see what the summer was like there. And so I found a job working on a small farm near Bar Harbor, which many people know for the big national park there. So it wasn't something I was drawn to necessarily or thought I would love. I just wanted a job, but it turned out I did love it. I loved the work, and I loved the kind of the meaning behind the work. And basically from that point on, I haven't really worked anywhere else but on farms. Always working towards having my own farm was the idea.
It seems like finding that connection to the land would be so important to drive forward. Tell us more about your connection to the family property here in Clark Fork.
Yeah, to me, it's the most magical place in the world. It's like, you know, the majority of my childhood memories are from this piece of land or from Lake Ponderay. And, you know, my sister and I, when we were 5 years old and 7 years old, used to, you know, in long car rides, talk about living in Clark Fork. So to me, it's a dream to be out here. And then not only to be on that land, but to be working with it every day is really special.
It may be obvious, but how did you choose your name for your business?
There's a lot of moose. We have 80 acres out there in Clark Fork, and we see moose at least once a week. But the truth is that this name is just plagiarized from a farm in Maine. I was on a long bike ride in Maine, and I saw a little sign that said Moose Meadow Farm in Maine, and I said, that's the name of our farm.
That's good.
There are a fair number of similarities to Maine in our area, the abundance of lakes and water and moose and southern Idaho potatoes, there's not an uncommon linkage here.
Yeah, and I'd say the people too, you know, mm-hmm. Very friendly, very welcoming mm-hmm. sort of people. So,
mm-hmm. Well, we're going to talk more about your farm, Spencer, but I just want to take a moment and reintroduce Emma. And I'd like to hear from Emma how you came to be here, because you haven't been here forever either, have you?
I have not. A newcomer. I am. Yeah, I'm originally from Moscow, a couple hours south, born and mm-hmm. raised. And we used to come up here for sports events, but we didn't come up here that often for some reason. I guess my family was always going down to the Sawtooth Mountains, Stanley, Sun Valley area, because my grandparents own land down there. And then my husband and I lived in Portland for quite some time, and there came a point where we decided that we indeed were small town folk and not city folk, and started looking at the Sandpoint area, and ended up finding a beautiful place out just north of town, and moved here in September. So
what piqued your interest about Sandpoint? Why did you start looking here?
Well, both our parents still live in Moscow, and so mm-hmm. that was a big part of it. But the water is a mm-hmm. really appetizing.
Us. Yes.
Exactly. And the big open spaces, lots of mountains. It's really appealing. And then I really like the conglomerate of people here. There's mm-hmm. All kinds of people with all kinds of backgrounds, and I think that's really fascinating.
It's quite a mix. And Emma, you live on a little land too, and you farm and you have animals. You're pretty connected with your land, and you haven't been there long.
Not long, and we still have, you know, a foot of snow on our garden.
Oh,
and no greenhouse yet, but we are little hobby farmers, but nothing to the extent that Spencer and his partner have.
So. Now, will you be just producing for yourself? Or
definitely, okay. Yes, just for us, and yeah. Figuring out. We have a few goats, so we're entering the realm of goats and figuring that out step by step.
And I have a disclaimer. I've met a couple of their goats, and they're the friendliest goats I've ever met, which is pretty fun.
Yeah, they love to get into trouble, but they are well-trained in ways.
Happy goats.
In certain ways, that's right. Well, I think we'll return to Spencer for a moment, because, Spencer, why don't you tell us something about how things progressed for you? So we know that you wanted to be a farmer, and you had access to family land, and you got here, and what happened next?
Well, within a week, we arrived on Cinco de Mayo, and within a week, we were building a house. So that took up the most, the majority of that summer was kind of building a house and getting our feet under us. And we weren't growing any vegetables that summer. But we put up some big greenhouses in that summer, the 2016 summer. And then we sold vegetables through the winter. And that was kind of the idea the whole time in moving here, was to have a year-round farm. We sell year-round vegetables and then we got up and running in 2017 with a summer CSA, a membership program, and also attending the Sandpoint Farmers Market. And then we rolled right into the winter of this past winter and kept selling vegetables. We have an online store is the way we do that. And then here we are now getting ready for the summer season.
That's right. I'd like to hear more about how you developed a plan for a sustainable garden business, because it's both a lot of labor and a lot of planning, and it just takes a lot to make it work.
Yeah, it definitely does take a lot, but it gives a lot. And I think that is the whole reason I'm here, is because it's super rewarding. And so there's risk and there's anxiety and there's all the planning and all that, but there's, you know, it gives a lot back too. And so, yeah, I think that's kind of, you know, broadening the scope. If you look at, you know, the sustainable food movement or the local food movement, that is why it's growing, is because it is a rewarding job. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And how many seasons have you been there?
Well, this will be the second summer.
Second summer. Yeah. Okay.
Second summer growing.
Okay. And your partner's background, is her background in an agricultural pursuit, or?
In the same way that mine is. Yeah. She got into it in college. She grew up in Portland, Oregon, and went to college in Maine. Also, she went to Bates College and had the same dream that I did, is to have a small farm. And so our dreams aligned. Yeah.
So how did you connect?
She's a couple years older than I am, and she had graduated from Bates and was then starting and managing the organic garden at Bowdoin. And so I started volunteering out there, and we got to know each other that way.
Mm-hmm. And you're organic, yes?
Yeah, certified organic.
Yep. Yeah, which is a great thing to be, and it takes a little extra work, I know. And did that take some additional education?
It didn't really, because so both Catherine and I, my partner, we had managed for the last couple years two separate farms in Maine, and both were certified organic, and so we were familiar with the process. And so here it was basically more of the same. You know, we knew the paperwork we had to fill out, we knew the records we needed to keep, all that, and so we were ready for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. Well, how did things develop? I mean, you must have a pretty big variety of plants and vegetables. And how does it come about that you make the right choices in this climate? It's got to be somewhat different from Maine.
Yeah, the first winter we were here really surprised us. We weren't ready necessarily for the grayness that can come with a North Idaho winter.
Yeah,
and so, you know, we were growing year-round in Maine and through the winter, but out there you get a lot of sun in the winter, and so the greenhouses will warm up and the ground will thaw out. And I don't know if you remember, but we had a really cold December, that December of 2016, and our greenhouses are unheated, and so it's just solar gain that's allowing the plants to grow. And the ground basically froze solid, and we couldn't harvest anything. We couldn't get it at our crops for a couple weeks. And that was very frustrating. And we learned a lot, and we made some adjustments and kept moving forward.
So tell us a little bit about the greenhouses. They're not just typical greenhouses, right?
No, they're very big. For one, we have about 8,000 square feet of greenhouse space, and it's all in ground, in the soil, so there's no, you know, hydroponics or anything like that. And yeah, that's basically it. There's no heat, and so we're just relying on whatever heat we can get from the sun. But even on a cloudy day, you know, especially in the spring, it might be 45 outside and cloudy, and it can easily be 70 in the greenhouses. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, right now our tomatoes are in the greenhouses and off and running. So
Well, that'll be a couple months ahead of everybody else's planting.
Well,
a foot or more on the ground in some places.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I always say that it's our job. We do it for a living. And so we should be ahead of the gardeners.
Around here, the local knowledge, at least, is if you're driving north across the Long Bridge, you look off towards Mount Baldy and you wait until it's bare of snow to plant your tomatoes. And so I'm thinking I'm garden free until about July this year.
Yeah, exactly. And then you'll be done by mid-August. Yeah. So.
Spencer, you mentioned that you started with the Sandpoint Farmers Market. We're going to be getting back to that in a minute. But at this point, it sounds like your CSA business might be very important to you. Why don't you tell us what a CSA is and how that's grown for you and why that's important to a community like ours, why it makes a difference?
Yeah. So CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture. And the idea is that our members, or the members of a CSA farm, will subscribe to that farm and pay up front, pay in the spring for a season's worth of vegetables. And the idea is that the farmer has a lot of expenses in the spring. You know, you need your seeds and your fertilizer and all that. You know, heat, if you're heating a greenhouse for seedlings and that sort of thing. And then you can also take the marketing load off your back, so that you do all your marketing in the slow season in January and February and March, and then you can focus on growing, you know, plants and produce and delivering that all summer. So our members pay upfront for 26 weeks of produce. It's May through October, and then we deliver once a week to Clark Fork and once a week to Sandpoint.
So it does make a big difference for you, for your planning, et cetera.
Exactly. The planning, right. You know, we know exactly what we need to produce. We have, you know, X number of members in our farm, and we know that each one has a certain dollar of value associated with them, and we have to grow that much produce. And so it works well. We can, of course, you know, it's all good on paper, and it never works out that way. But
And so to hit your quota, you overgrow, grow more, and then so if you do, what do you do with that part of the produce?
Yeah, so the second part of our business, we're focusing on grocery stores, the local independent grocery stores, and in Coeur d'Alene, actually, and here in Sandpoint, and they are very receptive to taking a lot of high quality produce. So that's one outlet, and then the other is some local restaurants, and they're very willing to take kind of anything extra we have, and be creative with how they can use it.
So that's how you manage the, if you will, risk element of how much to produce, and so the risk to the consumer who's buying their CSA share is minimized.
Yeah, definitely. It is minimized. But the idea, too, is that we share the risk, that the consumer and the farmer shares the risk. And so if we have a year where, you know, all of our tomatoes have a disease and nothing is harvestable, we feel that, obviously, financially, but the consumer feels that, too. And likewise, if we have a bounty, the consumer would feel that. And so that's the CSA model, is that it's shared risk and shared reward.
Mm-hmm. I see. So if you do have a boom summer crops, some of the excess would go to your members, but then beyond that, some could go to other sources.
Yeah, exactly. So we do, sometimes every member will get something free in their bag that week because we have a lot of it.
I see.
And do you have some sense going in beforehand of what kind of things you're going to produce? So with no guarantees, this is what the bag might look like in May, which is going to look different than the October bag.
Exactly. Yeah. So we do a free choice CSA. And so the farmers are not choosing what vegetables go in the bag. Our members choose each week. And so if you're out of town, you don't get a bag that week. You just don't place an order. And if you don't like tomatoes, you don't order tomatoes. And so that works well for the customer because they're getting exactly what they want. And one of the big problems with the CSA model is that, you know, people don't want to eat kale every single week, or they don't like rutabagas, or, you know, and so this way we've kind of sidestepped that, and hopefully our consumers, our members are happy.
Is there some input from your prospective customers prior to planting? Does that guide your crops for the upcoming season?
Yeah, definitely. We send out a survey at the end of the year and say, what did you like? What do you not like? And then we plan accordingly and try to, you know, we have to grow crops. Like, for example, we're not growing sweet corn. Everyone loves sweet corn, and unfortunately, we can't make money on it, you know. And so it is, one of the things I always say is that it's a sustainable farm, but the most important part of that to me is that it's a sustainable livelihood, economically sustainable.
It has to be both.
You know, so it you know, we focus on soil management and you know, pest management sustainably and all that, but we also focus on our livelihood sustainably.
Well, and we can't grow bananas either, so
exactly.
You just can't have everything in North Idaho.
Without coffee and bananas, it's hard to be self-sufficient.
There you go.
Avocados, obviously, yeah.
That's right. Well, it's interesting, and you know, the CSA model is interesting in this region because it does allow folks who hope to be local and sustainable maintain a business and a business model that can keep them coming back year after year. And you're discovering that.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. That's neat.
So at what point do you transition now from the weekly offerings to the CSA model?
It'll be the second Wednesday in May, I think. Okay. And then we'll go through October, and then we'll be back to our winter sales, which is just open to the general public.
And those are online?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yep.
Great. And you make deliveries into the cities?
Yeah.
Yep. Well, sounds pretty workable. It's interesting. We're hearing about one way of seeing that folks in the community get their organically grown, sustainable food. But I think let's move on to another way that they can do that. And I'll reintroduce Emma Stanford. Emma, tell us about your role, your new role at the Sandpoint Farmers Market.
Yes, well, I am pleased, overjoyed to be the community outreach manager for the farmers market here. And I am, well, the job title sort of says it all, but I focus on doing outreach with the community and advertising and trying to drum up community participation and just education about the farmers market. And my co-manager is Kelly Burt, so she's takes care of speaking and organizing the vendors and the bookkeeping side of things as well, always necessary with a farmers market nonprofit type organization. So this year, May 5th, is going to be our first day. And we're really trying to focus on doing more sort of community-centered events during the farmers market, just trying to get the community more involved. And
yeah, and you're new this year, and Kelly is new too?
We are both new.
Yeah, and there's a reason there are two of you, right? You're wanting to do, the market is wanting there to be more promotion.
Yeah, so as far as I know, my position is actually a new one. Mm-hmm. So in the past, Emily Levine, who's the owner of Red Wheelbarrow Produce, she used to do the advertising on the side, poor thing. So now I'm doing a lot of that, and trying to just, do more education and outreach and trying to get the community more involved. It's a beautiful market, but we, bigger is always better. So for the first day, for example, we're trying to bring back the kids table, trying to get more kids involved. That's a big thing that I want to focus on, is because a lot of it's during the summer, trying to, have kids come.
It's more than just signing up vendors. You're trying to make sure people know about it and get them interested in it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. And it, like I said, it's a really lovely market, especially for such a small town. We have so many vendors coming out. I think it's mm-hmm. a 100-mile radius. So we have a lot of vendors coming into town to sell their wares and, get to know the public.
So I'm sure the vendors change some every year with new farmers coming in and then other ones probably deciding to go a different route. And tell us about some of the changes. Who are some of the new faces that will be at the farmers market?
Well, we haven't done our, the board, I should say, hasn't done the jurying process yet.
Okay.
So that's going to be a surprise. The jurying process is tomorrow.
What is that? I have never heard of that part of the farmers market. Tell us about it.
Right. Well, I guess the first one is tomorrow, I should have said. The board, which is a group of vendors that do extra for the farmers market. They're the ones that hired me. Thanks, guys. If it's a food vendor, for example, the food vendor, if they're new, drops off a variety of the foods that they want to sell, and the board juries them and makes sure.
So you check for quality and make sure that quality. They're up to standards.
And with farmers, again, it's just kind of a quality and really sort of getting to know them idea.
Are there some minimum requirements, like they need to assure a certain amount of produce each week or other minimum requirements?
That would be a question for Kelly.
Okay.
But the information is definitely all on the website, which is sandpointfarmersmarket.com.
So if there are potential farmers out there who are for some reason just thinking, maybe I should do that this year, how would they get a hold of you or Kelly?
Well, and is it too late if the jury's tomorrow?
No, it's not too late. The first jury is tomorrow.
Okay.
And I believe that's just for food vendors. Again, that's more Kelly's jurisdiction than mine. But we do several jurying time slots in the next, I think it's over the next few months. And it is definitely not too late. We would love to get some new vendors. Again, we just are hoping to increase participation this year. So, and I know it has been, the weather has been rather enthusiasm perhaps is down, but so June 1st is the deadline for permanent vendors. And then if anybody just wants to come here and there, you can.
So they can sign up online? Or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so sandpointfarmersmarket.com. If you go to our website, you can find the application there, or you can find us on Facebook, and there's links to the application.
Sure, and there are also there's contact email for both you and Kelly there. Correct. As well, if they want to,
And then there's non-food vendors also at the market.
Exactly, yeah. There's goat soaps, there's other kinds of soaps, beautiful baskets, clothing, flowers, beautiful bouquets, all kinds of things. And again, there have been some new non-food vendors that have turned in applications yet, but I'm going to hold my tongue on that.
There you go. Well, I have questions about the hours, et cetera, who's coming, and just more about the farmers market in general for folks that might be new to the area.
So if you're just tuning in, this is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported radio for North Idaho. And this morning we're talking about gardening. It seems to be springtime, so it seems like a good topic. With us today is Spencer Neatman from Moose Meadow Garden and Emma Stanford from the Sandpoint Farmers Market. So welcome back to the second part of the show.
Yeah, thanks.
That's right. And we aren't quite finished with Emma. Emma, for folks that have not been in the Sandpoint and Bonner County area as long as some of us, tell us a little bit more just about the basics of the Sandpoint Farmer's Garden, the hours, what we might expect on a typical Sandpoint Farmer's Garden day. And it's more than one day, isn't it?
It is. We are lucky to have 2 days per week market. And the Saturday market is 9 to 1, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Wednesdays, it's in the afternoon, 3 to 5:30. So we do that so really anybody can come, even if they have time restrictions on Saturday.
Yeah, but it's always good to get there on the early side.
It is. And Saturdays definitely are a more popular day, both with vendors and community members. But that's another thing we are trying to work on, is get Wednesdays more drummed up, especially with kid events and that sort of thing.
However, mm-hmm. if you just want to get in and get some good veggies and get out, Wednesday is a great time to be at the farmer's market.
It is. It is a lovely day. And we have music on both market days. So even if you just want to come and get a bite to eat, or some tomatoes and listen to the music, it's a really nice time.
Yes. And so tell us a little bit about the music, because it's a variety of music, and there is food. There's great food that's prepared and that you can eat. It's not just picking up carrots, is it?
Exactly, yes. Well, Kelly is the woman who, or my co-manager, who books the music, and we officially have May full, which is very exciting. And we will be posting tomorrow the May lineup, so you can find that on our website as of tomorrow. And then as far as the food vendors, not produce, but ready-to-eat food, there are ones that have been coming the last few years, and then we do have several new ones this year. Again, I can't really say anything till the jurying.
But, come on, not even a hint. I guess not.
There's something involving peanuts, which Kelly was very excited about, and some coffee and extra snacks. So we'll see how
exciting
that goes. Yes, and we're just trying to encourage more of that and encourage people who might be interested in that to apply. Because we're trying
now,
to expand.
Is the jury also looking at music selections, entertainment acts?
That is Kelly's undeniable taste, and I've been inputting here and there.
You mentioned community events, some shift in focus to community events this year. Tell us about that.
Yes, so every Saturday of the month we have a sort of event focus. So this coming month. May 5th is our opening day, so that's going to be our, again, our focus. The weather's, I've been told, always a little bit tenuous on that day, but we're going to have a fun music event and a kids table and that sort of thing to celebrate. There's going to be garden starts to get everybody in the mood once Baldy's looking bare. And then June 9th is our customer appreciation day. So that's always a really fun day because there's free samples. And, you know, you just kind of get to know your vendors a little bit more. And then this year is a very exciting year because it's going to be our 30th anniversary.
Oh, wow.
And Kelly and I are working on making that just a fun event with lots of different musical acts. And not just musical, but some other kinds of entertainment on the stage. And that's going to be July 14th. And then there's a couple other big days coming up after that, but those are on our website too.
And you were mentioning on the break that one Saturday each month is a special kind of super Saturday. Tell us about
that. Yeah, so those are the ones that I mentioned, the second Saturday of every month. And so they're just kind of a little extra.
So if you're having to choose one Saturday each month, make it the second Saturday.
Exactly, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the seasonality, and maybe this is a question for both of you. What do you see coming on early this year? You know, how is it similar to or different from other years? And then walk us through the season about what we might expect to have.
Well, several vendors, I will say, are starting later this year. So the market might be a little bit smaller until the end of May, just because the weather has been so tough. So we will be seeing a lot of garden starts, which is, again, like I said, sort of a exciting thing for us. But Spencer?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we are not doing the farmers market this summer. But we do have fresh produce coming on. We've been selling greens all winter, lettuce and spinach and arugula. And we're starting to get back into radishes are coming on in the greenhouses, which is exciting to not be just harvesting and washing greens. We're getting some roots in there too. And bok choy will start to come on soon. And then once we hit mid-May, you know, we're kind of into the thick of it. Hopefully we'll have carrots and beets and new potatoes and peas and beans coming on, cucumbers, and then, you know, when June hits, it's a free for all. There's
so
everything.
First CSA bag will have a lot of stuff or a lot of selections.
That's the idea. Yeah, this year we are a little bit behind just because with the weather, it's been pretty cold and pretty rainy. But yeah, the idea is to have a pretty full selection from the get-go and to continue that right till the end. So.
And this is Spencer, this is something that we talked about before the beginning of the show, and you did make a decision not to be in the farmer's market this year. No, it wasn't because you don't like the farmer's market, I know that. Why don't you tell us why a sustainable farmer has a tough series of choices around where they're going to you know, where they're traveling to bring their produce?
Yeah, definitely. You know, the farmer's market for us, it was great. We loved the selling at the farmers market and interacting with the customers and seeing all those, you know, vibrant Sandpoint people. But unfortunately, it didn't make economic sense for us.
You are a ways out of town. You're over in Clark Fork.
We are,
sure,
yeah.
That has to do with it.
Yep, it's a 45-minute drive in and a 45-minute drive home. Yeah, with the CSA model, the membership model, all of our sales are taken care of and we can focus on growing. And so we don't have really great weeks and we don't have really terrible weeks of sales. And that kind of the emotional roller coaster of selling at the farmers market is it can wear on you. And I think this kind of ties into what Emma was saying, that as the farmers market continues to grow, the sales will kind of level out a little bit. So there again, go to the farmers market, support the local farmers there, and know that they have a hard job to do.
That's right. And maybe a different model of farming is more suitable to the farmers market. People that might have a lot of something one time of the year might want to bring that to the market and try and sell a lot of it. I'm not sure. Tell me, you guys.
Yeah, I think so. I think, the last four markets in the fall, it's just an enormous bounty, you know, and a lot of the farmers plan on that sort of production, you know, having, you know, tons of potatoes and onions and garlic for people to take home for the whole winter.
Right.
And for whatever reason, that's not the model we've chosen. We've chosen to have fresh produce available year-round rather than kind of these storage crops. You know, so it's kind of the two balance each other out. People can stock up on garlic from the farmer's market and then stock up on greens from us all year long. Yeah, so.
And there is a social element to the farmer's market that is important to some, not only the folks who come to buy, but those who participate as vendors.
Exactly. And I mean, as Spencer was saying, they're two different models because to get set up with an online store and things like that might not be for everybody. And if you want to kind of tap into that community and that networking aspect, again, perhaps it's not for everybody, but it is really a really magical experience. Mm-hmm. I visited the Sandpoint Farmers Market several times last summer after we bought our house and we were going through that whole rigmarole. And I was just amazed by the market because I grew up in Moscow and we have a very
extensive
market. Mm-hmm. And I just was blown away by little Sandpoint having such a vibrant market. And so... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and in some ways, I think it maybe motivates the grower, right? It's so exciting and motivating. It really gives you a reason to keep wanting to do what you're doing.
Exactly, yeah. And I think there's a lot of adrenaline, especially around the time Spencer was saying, when you start getting all those crops coming out of the ground, there's a lot of adrenaline and excitement and, you know, just really living up the summer season.
That's right. I wanted to come back around to the organic nature of produce in the area. And I know there are farmers and gardeners that are organic and that are not. The Sandpoint Farmers Market has both, doesn't it?
We do, yes. And the ones that are organic are marked at the market. Mm-hmm. So people can choose.
And there's kind of a big debate in the organic world right now, Spencer. Is this true?
Yeah, there is. There certainly is. I think, are you referring to hydroponics?
Yes, I am. Maybe not a huge debate, but it's a...
In our circles, I think it is a huge debate. Yeah, the debate is whether or not hydroponic production, which is essentially growing plants in a water nutrient solution, whether or not they can be certified as organic. And everyone we know in Bonner County is growing in the soil. So, you know, you're not buying hydroponic vegetables from the farmer's market, for example. But a lot of the organic, certified organic produce you buy in the grocery stores, especially in the winter, is produced hydroponically. If you're buying organic tomatoes from the grocery store in the middle of winter, it's like a 90% chance that they're grown in this water nutrient solution.
So is there a difference in certifications? Is there a different standard for the grocery store certification versus the farmer's market?
No, the certification is identical, and that's where the crux of the issue is that some people believe that only soil-grown produce should be certified organic, and other people believe that the hydroponics can be certified. And as of now, the U.S. government, the USDA, does allow hydroponics to be certified organic.
So is that a U.S. government certification or a state of Idaho certification?
The state of Idaho is audited by the U.S., the federal government. And so every certifier in the country, there's one in Montana, there's one in Washington.
The same standards every state.
It is quite a debate. What I imagine your view is for soil-grown organics, but I would think the products might be different and might taste different.
Exactly. And the taste, you know, I haven't experienced it firsthand, you know, doing a blind taste test or something like that, but people say that the taste in soil-grown produce is dramatically different than in water-grown produce, and it's not hard to imagine why. So yeah, I am a big proponent of soil-grown produce. I think the whole organic movement was founded in soil. It's all about protecting the soil and feeding the soil and conserving the soil and all that. And so to take the soil out of it and then still call your produce organic is... Well, to me, it's not right. But
right. The word terroir comes to mind.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, of the earth.
Right. Well, that is quite a debate. And do you see upcoming discussion about it, or is it settled now that the FDA is?
There was a recent ruling by the NOP, which is the National Organic Program, that hydroponics is allowed in organic production. And so I think it will circle back around, but it's going to take time, as it always will. But for now, it has been settled recently, and there's going to be no change.
So is there any way of knowing when you go into the grocery store if it's hydroponic or not? Is there a labeling thing?
No, unfortunately, and that's the other part of the issue is that there is no labeling, and so and you really don't know what you're getting, which I don't want to instill a lack of confidence in the consumer, but I think there is some reason to question what you're getting and where it's coming from. And that's another reason to buy local. You can get to know your farmer and get to know the community and all that.
I was about to say that very thing. Yep. We know it's soil grown when it's from our county.
Exactly. Yep.
It's nice to know where your tomatoes come from.
Yeah, definitely.
That's right. And that they will probably taste excellent because they were grown in soil. Well, as we begin to run short on time, I'm going to start wrapping things up. Emma, anything we should be thinking about as the farmer's market is getting ready to begin? Any last comments? And how about our contact info one more time?
Yeah, so starting with how to find out more about us, our website is very easy, sandpointfarmersmarket.com. We also have a Facebook. And if you want to contact Kelly, who's the co-manager, or myself, if you go to the website, it's just on the right-hand side, both a phone number and an email. And I would just like to say again, if anybody's in the least bit interested in vending, shoot us an email or a phone call. We'd love to talk. And May 5th is the first day. And
Opening day.
Yeah.
That's it. And Spencer, final words about your life and your work and how's it going? Do you see many, many more years ahead for you?
Yeah, definitely. I see a lifetime of work. And that's just this summer we have to get done.
That's right.
We're super excited that spring is coming and we're gearing up to...
Yeah, even with all those greenhouses, there's still a magic about spring when the earth gets warm from the sun directly.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, yeah. And we do a lot of outside planting, mm-hmm. So that's going to... Yeah, we're excited to...
You're about to get very busy.
Come alive. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Both of you. So we're lucky that we've had them now, Phil, because we won't hear from them much.
I do have one quick question, and that is pollinators. How do you handle the differences between plants that need pollination inside the greenhouse versus the outside, or do you grow only those that don't need that?
Yeah, so we do grow, we grow tomatoes and cucumbers and even melons and eggplants and peppers, all these plants that need to be pollinated inside the greenhouse. But the sides of our greenhouses, they roll up for ventilation. And so essentially when it's warm enough for the sides to roll up, that's also when the pollinators are active. Mm-hmm. And so they just come in and out of the sides as they please. It's a 5-foot tall sidewall, and it rolls all the way up that 5 feet, and that's plenty of access for the pollinators.
In the depths of winter, though, the pollinators probably aren't around, and so you have to shift a little bit the things you're growing for that reason as much as anything.
Yeah, for sure. But the weather, the coldness and the day length, mm-hmm. Those actually factor in more governing what we're growing. Sure. It's got to be able to survive the cold.
It's a complex business.
It is. It's complicated, and we're lucky we have them. Well, I want to thank you both for joining us. Emma Stanford from the Sandpoint Farmers Market, thank you. And Spencer Neatman from Moose Meadow Garden, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having us.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
For those of you who haven't been listening the full hour, this is 88.5 KRFY listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. We're going to go to a song break and then be back with some upcoming morning shows and current events. As these folks will be... And that was Brandi Carlile and Emmylou Harris with Take Me Home Country Roads. And we're back on the KRFY Morning Show with me, Julie Calamine, and my co-host, Phil Huff.
That was a fun show. Hopeful that spring's around the corner.
It sure is. It's around the corner, and I think we'll start to feel that way on Thursday and Friday.
Let's hope so.
Yes. Well, Phil, let's talk about upcoming morning shows. And we have tomorrow, Wednesday, the 18th, Local Decision Primary 2018. I hope you'll join hosts Susie Prez and Chris Bessler for that show. It begins at 8 a.m. And the invited guests are Republican candidates for District 1 Senate seat. And again, that's tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. And then Thursday, join Thursday morning show hosts Jack Peterson and Jim Healy with a to-be-announced topic. The next Tuesday, Phil will be away, but you'll have me at least.
I'll be gone.
That's right. And I'll be chatting with folks from the Pocket Poetry. The Friends of the Library is hosting that, and I understand we're going to have a proclamation from the mayor proclaiming April 26th Pocket Poetry Day,
and
Phil.
What is pocket poetry?
It's a poem in your pocket, and okay. So they'll be passing poems around the park.
Perfect.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. Phil, tell us about upcoming events.
We've got some stuff, fun stuff, starting tonight on the 17th. And also on the 19th, there's Intro to Bike Maintenance, another hopeful sign of spring. Sandpoint Parks and Recreation partners with the Sandpoint Sports for an Introduction to Bike Maintenance class to teach participants how to keep those parts running and operating like they're brand new. You can find out more from the Parks and Rec at 208-263-3613. Tomorrow night, also Wednesday, Bonner Partners in Care fundraiser at Idaho Poor Authority. On that evening, they host Partners in Care Clinic for a fundraiser from 5 to 8 p.m. So enjoy live music with Marty Perrin and Doug Bond, raffle prizes, and complimentary appetizers. Always stuff going on in Sandpoint. The 19th to the 21st, so I guess it's a three-night run, is Shrek the Musical. Take a funny story, add music, and sprinkle of dance, and voila, you have musical theater. Add in about 70 Sandpoint area children, as well as a good number of talented adults, and you have magic. Shrek the Musical, presented by Growing Dreams Production, Inc. and Sandpoint High School Mimes and Masks, takes the stage at the Sandpoint High School Auditorium. Showtimes are at 7 p.m. each night, and I suppose you can find out more simply by showing up or contacting the high school. Tickets are available in advance at Brown Paper Tickets, Eve's Leaves, and from cast members. Does that sound like fun, Julie? Or you're going to be out fishing?
Oh, possible, but no, it does sound fun, Phil.
Yeah. The Bonner General Health Community Hospice Adult Grief Support Group meets on the 19th. That's an important thing. You can find out more information about that by calling Lisa at 208-265-1185. And I think we were talking about this a few weeks ago, but the American Sign Language course continues at the Sandpoint Library from the 20th to the 27th. Courses start at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays, April 13th and 27th. Learn American Sign Language from a certified instructor, Susan Schaller. For more information, email Susan at susan.schaller@gmail.com. You know what this weekend is?
You better tell me, Phil.
Earth Day, April 22nd.
Yes, I do know that.
Lots of things going on for Earth Day. The first thing going on for Earth Day is the Earth Day Dance Odyssey. Begin the Earth Day weekend on the dance floor with a special tribute to the forest that grows with our community. People in forests share the freedom of diversity and also in the power of oneness. The soul of motion, conscious dance practice is a supportive environment to explore this freedom and power through movement and stillness. Open for all levels and abilities. You can find out more at moondancermoves.com. Sounds like a good way to start the Earth Day weekend. There are also celebrations, the one here in Sandpoint on the 22nd, if we slip ahead to that, is the North Idaho Earth Day Celebration in March. All are welcome to join in the North Idaho Earth Day Celebration to raise awareness on local environmental issues. So is it about time for us to go out with a song then?
It is, Phil.
Okay. Well, that's going to wrap up our community events. For those who are last-minute preparers, today is actually tax day. Many years it's on April 15th, but today, because the 15th fell on a holiday on Sunday, on a weekend on Sunday, and because Monday was a holiday in D.C., Emancipation Day, we actually have until today to file our taxes. So if you haven't gotten around to it yet and you thought you were late, get them in.
Or file your extension.
Yep. And to give you a little inspiration, I think we're going to go out with a Beatles song, aren't we?
We are. It's the Tax Man. Have a great week, everybody, and get your taxes filed.